For a man who always wanted to become a pilot, Adrian Eichhorn didn't get to solo in an aircraft until he was 29. Now, at, I'm not going to say how old he is, because okay. I'm too nice about that. I don't want anybody to say how old I am either. Now, as a JetBlue A320 pilot, he has made an epic solo trip around the world in a highly modified vintage Bonanza November 1733 Gulf, also known as Gina, a single-engine Beechcraft Bonanza that he has brought here to EAA AirVenture 2016. Adrian, welcome to EAA Radio and Attitude Adjustment. How are you today?
Well, thank you, Amy. Absolutely fantastic. It's an honor to be here.
Fabulous. Tell me a little bit about this flight. You hinted to me that it wasn't always as easy as it looked on paper. Sounds like the planning turned out to be the easiest part.
You know, when I look back, people say, oh, it must have been such a fun adventure. Fun's probably not the right word to use. I think the planning portion of it, getting ready when you're just looking at a map of the world and thinking you got to draw a line all the way around, the planning part is really pretty fun. But once you take off and you're on a journey and you realize you're, even though I flew the trip solo, I didn't fly it solo because I had an excellent ground support crew with two gentlemen, John Whitehead, who's a retired FedEx pilot, and Bill Compton, both Bonanza pilots. Bill is a retired doctor. Both longtime friend Bonanza pilots, they were my ground support crew, which was probably one of the most valuable things, most comforting things for the trip. And then Dave Monty, who was my maintenance ground support crew, that I knew that if there were any issues, I could talk with these people and they would help me. So it was a solo flight. Tom Haynes from AOPA flew with me from Normandy to Friedrichshafen, Germany, down into Greece and to Egypt, and then we rode camels together. We saw the pyramids.
Oh, sweet.
That was a pretty epic event. And then Tom went home, and the rest of the trip was solo. But I by no means made it alone, Amy, because these guys were there. We could text. We could call on satellite phone, and going across the Pacific, I'd get weather updates via the spider tracks from John Whitehead, and it very comforting to know that they were with me the whole way. And that's something for anybody that's thinking about doing an epic trip, whether it's to South America or around the world, is to pick a good crew, because a lot of the countries, as you quite might imagine, internet phone service might not be available or very good. So
yeah, you sound like they supported you both from the logistical standpoint, weather-wise, but also, where am I actually going to end up? Mm-hmm. If the weather was bad, you needed to reroute.
Yeah.
Did you have to do that a couple times?
No, I was fortunate. I got scared pretty bad going across Saudi Arabia, down through the southern tip of India and into Indonesia, because there are no weather services available.
Oh, my.
You know, it's not like here in the States where a controller say, hey, you're 12 o'clock and 40 miles, you got moderate to extreme precipitation. You don't have that. And you don't have any in-cockpit weather. Mm-hmm. I did have a storm scope, and storm scopes, I think, work marginally well compared to, I mean, it's the best you can have. But yeah, you're outside the United States and you're on your own. So getting weather updates, either via text, it was very comforting because I could look out 300-400 miles and if I had to divert before my equal time point. But yeah, it was an amazing trip.
You carried a lot of gas in that airplane. When we talk about highly modified, can you explain what you did to the airplane to make it? I mean, it's a beautiful V-tail Bonanza,
yeah.
But you did some things to make it work for this trip.
I did, Amy. About 4.5 years ago, Dave Hirschman and I and two other Bonanzas and a couple guys, we took a trip up to Greenland. And when we got back, we realized that there would be another epic trip in our future. So I put the airplane in the hangar. I've always been in love with the Bonanza. It's a phenomenal airplane. It's amazing that you can take 1962 technology, put some upgraded avionics and some tip tanks and fly it around the world. It's got an incredible capability. But when we got back from the Greenland trip, I took the wings off the airplane. I made a big effort to reduce as much weight out of it as I could. It allowed me to carry more fuel. And about 20 years ago, there was a gentleman in Texas, Frank Hale, who got some old surplus military drop tanks that were 230 gallons each. And he made these 100-gallon tip tanks out of them. And a couple guys in Texas, they were really the original Earth Rounders. And I was able to obtain a set of those tanks for my airplane, get a field approval. And that allows me to carry, I'd have to get a special flight permit, obviously, when you go over your max gross takeoff by 5 or 10 or 15%, if I were to fill the airplane all the way up to the top with gas, it would have about a 28-hour range. And at 150 knot true airspeed, you're looking at over 3,000 nautical mile range.
Wow.
Fortunately, I never needed to do that. And it was a challenge flying through the Middle East with the temperatures for the performances you can imagine when you're taking off that heavy.
Airplane's engine.
It is, yes, very much so.
Did you have a technique you used to make it easier on it?
Shallow climb, keep the airspeed up, keep as much cooling going through the engine compartment as possible. There were times I'd see the maximum about 200 to 300 foot per minute rate of climb.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, for how long would you just go like that, just for an hour?
You know, I initially would climb, it was an eastbound rounding, so my altitudes were always odd. I'd initially climb to 5, burn off some weight, go up to 9, go up to 11,000 feet. But actually, flying over the water, the temperatures would drop, and the performance was surprisingly good.
Well, now, let's talk a little bit about taking the big jet pilot and putting him back into the Bonanza. Was there some adaptation there, too?
You know, Amy, I came up through general aviation. I love general aviation. I was flying November 1 for the FAA, had probably the best corporate dream job on the planet, and I left that to go to the airline so I could have a schedule, so I could fly GA, teach GA, work on airplanes. And so, no, but I'll just make a side note here is I meet pilots all over the world that might have seen something on the website or say, oh, you fly the L-39 or you're a flight instructor or used to fly November 1 or for the Washington Redskins. And quite often their response is, well, I'm just a private pilot or I just have an instrument rating. And I want to shake those guys because it's so much more difficult when you're flying single pilot IFR by yourself. There's
more
risk.
In a single engine airplane.
Well, exactly. And it doesn't matter whether you're going from Wichita to Oshkosh or just anywhere, because when I go to work at JetBlue, my first day back on the job, I almost felt like I needed to pay the company to come to work because
Don't say that.
Yeah,
this
we
is
don't
on
want the
air.
Union to hear that. But, you know, I have dispatchers, I have crew services, I have maintenance facility, I have a chief pilot, a training department. Everybody's looking out for me. In the airlines, they provide me the information, and the captain and I make the decision whether we should fly or not. In the GA world, guess who makes it? You do. And
that's
you have
right.
no support. When I'm in Sri Lanka going to Kuala Lumpur, I don't even know where to go to file my flight plan. Where do I get my weather? And the weather is generally vague and not very active, so... No, I love GA flying. It challenges me more, and at this point in my career, it almost challenges me more than flying for the airlines because I have such a support network at the airlines.
Yeah, I understand that. But did you have any mechanical issues that your support group helped you with during the flight?
Actually, no.
Can't believe that. You had an airplane that worked all the way
around
the world?
Well, I did have an autopilot problem and had to hand fly a 15-hour leg.
Oof.
And that was challenging, especially because the last 4 hours were at night.
Okay.
And I realized out over the Pacific Ocean that if something happened, I wouldn't be in a good place, period. Having to ditch at night, not knowing what the sea state was because I'm on there's undercast layer clouds below me, but... you know, I didn't even put air in the tires. The engine ran perfectly.
Wow.
I changed the oil twice, and it ran perfectly. I was very, very... I think I'm more proud of the fact the airplane made it around the world without an issue.
I'm astonished.
I know. 54-year-old airplane, 1962 Bonanza.
Yeah, but she's got such great bones.
She does, and she's made in America.
There you go.
She's made in America by Beechcraft.
Yeah, there's some serious people who were hand-building. If you've ever been in an aircraft factory, and this is even true to a big extent today.
Absolutely.
These airplanes are hand-built.
Hand-built, and you think of it back in the 60s after the war, the production of aircraft in this country, and new airplanes coming out all the time. And, you know, a lot of people don't like the V-tail because of the stigma that it had with the fork-tailed doctor killers and the tail issue, but it's a phenomenal airplane. And they were built with slide rules and paper and not computers, and... That is pretty amazing when you stop and think of it. You can take this isn't like I'm flying a couple million-dollar Pilatus or TBM. I'm flying a little airplane that I bought in 1989 for $35,000 and started coming here to EAA, and that's what inspired me to learn more about maintenance and getting my ratings and seeing what the home builders built here. Inspired me to... There was a period where every time I did something and went to Oshkosh, I'd go home and I'd want to tear it all apart and redo it because there's so many craftsmen here. And that's the true joy of this.
I agree with you. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, you said it when you say, I spent $35,000 on that airplane. Think about that for a second. You could have bought a car.
Absolutely.
But you bought an airplane.
Yeah, and that was with a $5,000 loan from my father because I had just... paid for all of my flight instruction, and I barely had any money at the time, but we bought that Bonanza, and here we are, well, whatever the math is, from 1989 till 9, still own it, and flies as well as ever.
Well, where can people find it on the field here at EAA AirVenture 2016?
Amy, it's sitting next to Building C on the east side, right next to the L3 tent. L3, along with Breitling and Jeppesen in Lightspeed, were some of the main sponsors for the trip in terms of product. L3 provided the new Lynx 9000 transponder, so I was compliant for ADS-B in Europe. The ESI 500 standby attitude indicator and a storm scope. So it's right next to their tent. It's on the east side of Building C. And by the way, L3 is giving away, I think, 36 units, almost one an hour here at Oshkosh, Lynx units. So go to their website and sign up. They're a pretty generous company, and I'm thankful to have their support, so that's where she's at.
That's exciting. I've flown with that Lynx product, and it's really quite fascinating. It solves the problem in airplanes like yours. Just put it in.
Yeah, and that's just another thing, how fortunate we are here in the United States, because you can use the information on it, but once you cross through Canada and the rest of the world, they don't have these services.
Yeah.
So we are so fortunate here.
We really, really are. Adrian, thank you so much for being on Attitude Adjustment here at EAA Radio. We are so appreciative of you taking the time to stop by, and we will see you around the field during EAA AirVenture 2016. We'll be right back.